Hey now, we're back. This is our 52nd.
Woo! That's how many months there is in 1 year.
It's a deck of cards.
But we've taken a lot of breaks, a lot of injury stoppages, you know, 2 minute warnings.
A lot of like explosive diarrhea.
A lot of that. But it is January 26th, almost the end of January, which is good for us film critics because that means the worst of the movies are about over. Or halfway over?
Yeah. Gotta get through February. Let's not get cocky.
Yeah.
And we are the Multimedia Men and Women Podcast. We're with Andrew Conway.
Hello.
Adam Conway of the Angelica Film Center.
Huh? Yeah.
I'm Brian Kluger with Boomstick Comics. And our main person, our podcaster here today is Gwen Reyes from Fresh Fiction TV, who's been gone for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. She's been in Los Angeles. She's part of the television.
She's in LA Glow right now.
Right? She's part of the Television Critics Association, which is a big deal, so which means twice a year she used to go to L.A. for 3 weeks to discuss all the new movies and talk with all celebrities.
Yeah,
so what?
Not movies. TV shows. My real friends.
My real
imaginary friends.
So I have the two big questions I want to ask you that everybody's dying to know is what celebrities did you sleep with? And if so, how were they?
So this year I didn't get to sleep with any celebrities, which was very sad. I was just too busy.
Sad. That's a shame.
So busy. And, you know, I have a boyfriend and I don't think he would like that so much. Here's the thing. I do have a list and I only have like one person on it. And it's the other one. It's Tom Hiddleston.
Of course.
He wasn't there this year.
He wasn't there this year, but he was there 2 years ago.
Okay.
And that was one of the most embarrassing.
Isn't he starting a new TV show though?
He is going to be on the new AMC show, but they're filming it. So it's AMC and BBC America are doing it together. It's it is based off of a John le Carré book called The Red Machine. But it's coming out they're filming it in April. It'll be out April 2016.
Oh, wow.
So I'm very, very excited about that.
So maybe you'll be there next year and you can...
He'll for sure be there and I will for sure be there and we will all be... We're having the same conversation in January when I come back.
So the TCA, what were some of the best panels? What were some of the worst panels? What were some of the best shows that you found out about that you could tell us about?
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm most excited because I'm going to kind of break it up based off of cable versus broadcast because that's kind of how our weeks go by. So it starts...
Who does the best panels out of those, the best presentations out of...
It really depends. I always enjoy Fox because Fox and FX, I always enjoy their panels because one, they are really good about bringing lots of talent out. So like my whole job while I'm there is to interview as many people as I possibly can because otherwise it's like, okay, I'm sitting here and you're presenting me shows that aren't going to make it and I don't want to talk to any of these people. But Fox and FX are really good about bringing in past shows, not just doing – because usually TCA is set up – where it's press junk, it's like a conference style. So you just sit in a ballroom at a table.
So it's like a boring convention, but with TV.
But with TV. And so it's like panel after panel after panel, 45, 50 minute panels.
Do you actually listen or do you color?
I do. And since I'm a member of the organization, I tend to like, as much as I want to sit and write, I actually, because we're also there with our laptops up, and so you constantly hear from actors like, oh, you guys aren't even paying attention to us. But I tend to feel a little bit of obligation towards the organization, so I will sit there and actually pay attention and ask questions.
Cool.
So there'll be times where I'm like super busy and paying lots of attention, and other times I'll just be like, no, this is not relevant to my interest. Like Discovery is usually a network that I don't care about. So those moments, if I'm in the ballroom, I'm like have my headphones in and I'm typing and working on Twitter or something. But then
speaking of Fox though, what's with
you don't want to know
Empire?
I love Empire. You guys are nuts. That show is my jam. The show is so good.
Did they do something there with Fort Empire?
Well, so Empire, it had.
What is Empire?
Empire is a new show on Fox. We're going to have our fourth episode tonight while we're recording. It's on Tuesdays at 7. Or, yeah, it's Tuesdays at 7. Tuesdays at 8. Yeah. And it is a show. It's kind of like if you think about King Lear, but set it during a hip or set at a hip hop mogul's.
It's the urban King Lear.
It is the urban King Lear. It stars Terrence Howard, who is a very controversial actor because he likes to beat his wives and ex-wives, and he's got a little bit of a trouble. But his character Lucius is a he's like a Jay-Z sort of figure. He owns this company, he owns this record label called Empire, and then at the same, and he's got three kids, and one of them works for him, another one's a rapper, and another one's gay.
They always sounds like Hustle and Flow.
It's a lot like Hustle and Flow because it also stars Taraji B. Henson as his crazy ex-wife. But it's great, and it's written by Lee Daniels, who did The Butler, and
he also did Paperboy, though.
Well, I like Lee Daniels, and he also, and then it's also got Danny Strong in it, who's writing it, who wrote Game Change. You might remember him from as Jonathan from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but now he's actually had a very successful second coming as a very hot-to-trot writer.
Nice.
So he did Game Change. He wrote Butler. He did not write Slama, but
did he write the one after Game Change with?
I hope he does a Hot to Trot remake because I would love to see
Governor.
That's Game Change.
Oh, it's Game Change. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So yeah, he wrote that. He won an Emmy for that, actually. But it's a really good show, and it's very soapy. It's very trashy. It's got a lot of great one-liners, and it's a lot of if you like your.
So it's not one you have to pay attention to.
No, it's definitely. I mean, there's a lot of character development. You can tell the huge difference between the episodes that like Danny Strong wrote versus the other writers they brought in. Like episode 3 was a little bit rougher than episode 1 and 2 because they were just like on the ball, like really tight writing, really really well acted. The newer one, the third episode, last week's episode, was kind of went off a little bit, but it's so fun. And if you kind of are interested in hip hop culture or music industry or just like a really saucy romance, soapy story. It's
so besides
really
Empire, what were the best panels? What were
the best panels? Okay, this is really hard. So I wanted to come in and say that Netflix's panel for the fall was really good, and that just the second season of that premiered on January 16th.
Did they bring in the cast?
They brought in Gillian Anderson, and they brought in Christian Grey has got a real name, Jamie Dornan.
Formerly titled, what's his name from Pacific Rim?
Oh, Charlie Hunnam.
Yes.
Formerly that one. And I really liked that show. Adam and I both really liked it, except for we kind of agree it falls apart near the end of
this.
I've seen, it is true, exactly. I've seen the first two episodes of it, and it definitely didn't capture the same sort of immediacy that the first season had for me. But I think that's because I now know these characters. I'm kind of in it. But it's a story about a serial killer who only kills beautiful women, but he's also very handsome. And he is doing his murders, and then Gillian Anderson comes in as a detective who is investigating this. First, she came in investigating like a weird paper trail discrepancy, and then turns out that there is a serial killer that's been working in Belfast that she starts to
find out
about. So it's really good. It's very dark. It's very gritty. So if you kind of like Broadchurch or if you like Luther, I think it's a really good comparison with Luther.
What makes for a good panel? So you're there for 3 weeks. You're obviously constantly in these panels or these discussions. What makes for an engaging?
It's really challenging because one side of me really wants to be entertained. So like the comedy panels are always really fun. So like if you have a panel with, we had an Undateable panel would be a good example. I don't really care for that show. It's a NBC show. It's going into its second season this mid season in March.
NBC doesn't have anything.
No, NBC and NBC is also getting out of the comedy game. They're not into comedies anymore.
Fuck comedy, right?
Yeah, they're like no. I mean, they completely
the
got
Office
rid of,
and that was it, right?
It, well, there's like Seinfeld, like all those are like we're done. They're like. Parks and Rec is over this year.
I think Fox is doing it well. So.
Fox is doing very, very well, and they're smart because they're diversifying and moving their days around. So they're not just putting like front loading all their comedies on Tuesdays or all their comedies on Wednesdays. They have some stuff on. They're pairing live action and comedy together, which is really nice. But what makes for a good panel? I mean, it's really hard because like of course I want to go in and watch the funny ones because they're really funny and enjoyable at the time. But as a journalist, those are really hard. Because typically they're just trying to make you laugh and try to get a response, and they're not giving you anything that you can use. Yeah. So that's always, that always tends to be a hard time. So you have to write around those stories and you don't get a lot of good quotes out of them. But then you have, then you'll have ones like the Penny Dreadful panel, which, I mean, it's in the title, Dreadful. It is the worst panel. We've done it now twice, and because they just can't talk about anything. They refuse.
Everything's so secretive.
They're so,
so
secretive.
Why would you do a panel?
That's what we always ask.
Did they bring any of the actors out?
They'll bring, like, for that one, they brought the showrunner, and then they did not bring Eva Green out this year, because I think she's filming still. But they,
naked accent, she likes to eat.
They got Josh Hartnett and another one of the actors from the show. But it's just, they sit there. They just sit there and they don't talk, because they're like, I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to answer those. I don't want to talk about that. It's, you have to watch. You get a lot of... You'll just have to watch to find out. And it's like, how am I supposed to tell people?
I'm trying to
help you by doing your job. But so you have a lot of those. Those are really challenging. But then you have really great ones. Like Brian Gumbel was a great, his for Real
Real Sports
with Brian Gumbel was a great panel. He was really great because he's also a journalist. So he understands the back and forth that we have to play with each other. But he also gave, he did not give a shit. And so he was just talking about the NFL's decision on the Roger Goodell and like all of these things. So it was really, that one was really, really good. There's some that are really good, and then there's other ones that are just, they just fall flat. So,
all right, talk to me, since WWE's Royal Rumble happened last night, did you get any information in WWE?
No, we didn't. WWE, the only thing we got was that Tough Enough is coming back.
Yeah.
Is awesome.
Is The Miz going to host it?
I don't think The Miz is going to host it, although that would be really cool.
Yeah,
that would be totally stunt double. Miz will host it.
I love The Miz.
So, I was going to ask real quick, how many panels are there over the 3 weeks?
So over the 16 days that I'm there, we have...
Well, how many can you get to? I'm sure there's...
Yeah, no, basically you just sit in one big ballroom, so they all come to me. So I just sit at a desk and they, like,
so
they present.
So you all one place.
Yeah,
okay,
so it's one big ballroom. Okay. I sit there. But we can have anything in our panels from, like, I think, like, a short day is, like, 10 panels.
Okay.
Because it's about 10 hours, and then sometimes they'll split them up a little bit. A long day is probably about, I shouldn't say that, it's like, a short day is, like, 8, and a long day is about 15. Because it just depends. Some of them, and then, like, the cable will come in for 5 days, and that'll be everything with HBO, let's see, HBO, Nat Geo, Discovery, some of the little mini ones, Hallmark, Lifetime, Viacom will get a whole block. So, like, a lot of them will get these blocks that are, like, you get 6 hours, and you can present as many panels as you want in that 6 hours.
Did you get any cool swag?
I did get a lot of really cool swag. HBO always gives the best swag, because they give, like, a nice bag, usually give, like, a pretty nice bag, and there's always some, like, snacks and stuff in it, but they always give full-length, like, full sets of the series, but relevant. It's not like USA gave us. I could tell that somebody was going through the cabinet. They were like, "We gotta get rid of this stuff." So I got like
season one.
No, I got season one of Monk.
Hey, we start from the beginning.
I got season three of Suits, and I was like, "All right."
What did HBO give you?
So HBO gave Girls Looking.
I got
and something else full season for the last season, and then I never got into Game of Thrones or anything, but I used to get True Blood a lot, which
they sent
I liked.
Me Game of Thrones last week,
and then that is exciting. Actually,
Looking was terrible, by the way.
I love Looking.
I did not
that
like
show.
Looking.
I love that show so much. The season's nothing.
Sorry,
huh?
Why don't you like Looking?
It's not my demographic.
Well, I
don't like.
I do. I will say that Looking, we can compare our notes, but I thought Looking was actually had an original take of the. Not like a group of gay guys. Mm-hmm. They're not like what I've usually seen before. Looking was like all the gay guys are
flamboyant.
Always successful and not flamboyant, but like very successful. They have luxurious apartments and a lot of fun. Here, like everybody's really awkward. They don't know what to say. They're not witty and they are not successful, really.
Right, which I really love because
I like that aspect.
Unlike
of it.
Girls, which is it's always compared to, it's the same sort of same
which
age
yeah.
a little
well,
bit.
It was compared to Sex and the City and Girls. And I was like, how is it other than
it's
just a group
easier.
Of people?
It's just easy to explain.
And then I thought they are filming in beautiful San Francisco and they muted the whole fucking color scheme.
Yeah.
Oh, I hated that.
See, I love that element because I totally agree with everything you're saying, and those are all reasons I really like it. Because I think, especially the lack of success on that, but all of them seem to be going in this direction of wanting success and at least having ambition and trying to be better with their lives. And they make stupid choices. Like, this season has been full of stupid choices. Like, I feel like they got notes back saying, this isn't, like, girls enough. You need to have more fucked up characters.
See, I don't think I mean, there's just nothing.
Do you like the direction girls are going in this season?
I watched the premiere. I gave up on that show last season, but I still find myself coming back in because I just hate those characters so much.
I still enjoy Adam's storyline.
I want to stick with it.
Adam and Alex.
Well, the dudes are the best part of that show.
I stick with it through the end.
Were there any new HBO shows they talked about at all?
So, for HBO, we had a new Frank Sinatra doc. We had a lot of documentaries this time. HBO was a little light.
What about that show that's supposed to be like Serial, but like a... an actual, what was it called again?
The Jinx.
Oh, with Robert Durst. Which is funny because, yes, that was really interesting. I saw the first two episodes of that, and it's really good. So this is a documentary series called The Jinx, which I think is 8 episodes long, that HBO is launching next month. And it follows a man, Robert Durst, that you may remember the character from All Good Things, I think. It was a Ryan Gosling movie with Kirsten Dunst, where he played a murderer. He murdered his first wife. Well, this is the true story that's based off of, about this man who was a... Robert Durst was
a very
rich man who was an heir to a huge fortune. I can't remember the fortune now. You guys are asking me so many questions. His first wife died mysteriously, and he got off for it. They couldn't find any proof. Then he had another wife that died, also got off for it. And he's just had these very interesting circumstances that have surrounded these people that keep dying in his life, but he keeps getting off for essentially murder. So this, the director, goes in and tries to like reveal more about him. And what's really cool about this one, and Lifetime has one is, or not Lifetime, Investigation Discovery has a documentary about Robert Durst as well coming out this year for their Vanity Fair series. But this one, they actually get to interview Robert Durst. Like, he opens himself up enough to get interviewed by the director. And it looks really, really good. The first two episodes are really cool. If you like Errol Morris or you're really into documentaries, I think this is a good fit. We also saw Togetherness, which is the new Mark Duplass show. I like it a lot better than Married.
I like Steve Zissou's.
It's growing,
It wasn't my favorite, but I'm comparing it to Married.
They're throwing him a bone, basically. It's for...
Yeah. But I love those Duplass brothers, so I'm happy to see them kind of doing their own thing
deal
there.
For Netflix,
they did,
which is ridiculous.
Tell me about this Frank Sinatra thing.
And so there's a Frank Sinatra documentary that HBO was really pushing their documentaries this time around. But it's a documentary all about Frank Sinatra, and
Scorsese have something to do with that one?
No, not which that one. Scorsese is doing a narrative.
The Rock and Roll with Dennis Leary.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's basically like going to be like Entourage with Rock and Roll.
Yeah, that's called... and that's different
sex,
than...
Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll.
Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll. That's on FX.
Okay.
But
it's a different one.
Well, there was like another one that Mick Jagger was doing with
him. Yeah, that's Mick Jagger and Mick Jagger and Martin Scorsese are doing a narrative one for HBO.
You sat in a panel with Dan Harmon, right?
Yes, for Community.
For Community. Did he talk about anything about Rick and Morty season 2?
He did not. He might have in the scrum, which is like after you do your panel, you can go up and get follow-up questions done.
Okay.
But I didn't go.
There was not a Cartoon Network or
a new season of Community comes out pretty soon on Yahoo, right?
Yeah, February.
So is that the first like big series for
Yahoo?
Yeah.
Yeah, for Yahoo, that is. They're also trying to really launch their news division, so that's why Katie Kirk's come over there to help them really work. Because that's one of the things that Yahoo has really powerful in is their news division. So they're trying to tap into that news video world. So Katie Kirk's working with them. But Yahoo only presented Community when they brought them. But they have other things, but it's just like the shows that they want extra publicity on. Those are the ones that they present to us.
Was there a Mad Men, anything with AMC?
There was Mad Men. So for AMC, we had the Mad Men final panel. We had Halt and Catch Fire, which almost put me in an early grave. And
is it one?
No, because it's terrible. Better Call Saul.
Okay, before we get to Better Call Saul, let's talk about what put you or what killed you.
Well, I just don't care for that show, and I know that...
I like it.
Well, you can pretty much go in any direction.
Why don't you like that show?
It's so open. Mm-hmm. So it might get better.
I mean, I hope so. I hope for the end of the day. Because you have to understand with TCA, it is a very unnerving experience for art, for the creatives and the talent that have never done it before. Because they get up on this stage, they sit there, they get a thrown a mic, and then there's this huge ballroom of people sitting there at desks with laptops up. So if you're going in thinking people are going to rave, and we're also journalists, so we don't clap. We don't get
before
pictures
we move
taken.
On, I wanted to ask you about that. You wrote about that. Mm-hmm. What is your stance on the press industry clapping, asking for autographs, pictures, and stuff like that?
If... I did. I do not get pictures with talent. I just don't. And if I ever do, I don't put it up anywhere.
It's a personal.
It's a professional thing. I'm not a fan. I am a journalist. I'm professional. I'm working. Which I know it's hard. And I also, my biggest thing about it is I'm not the story. I feel like people who take pictures of themselves with the talent are trying to put them into the story of their article that they're writing, or making themselves bigger because they are friendly for that 5 seconds with Wes Anderson or whatever it is. Like, it doesn't seem right to me for the stories that I'm telling. The clapping thing is a little bit different, because there's nothing better than when TCA is over and you get to clap, and it's like the, because that's still at the end of the day something I'm very excited about. During our panels, we don't clap. The only time that breaks a little bit is if it's a performance. So like they'll break. So, PBS, for example, brought out Billy Porter, who has a new, he's doing Live from Lincoln Center performance with all his new songs from one of his albums. He performed and it was amazing. And I was like, fuck this shit. And I just like clapped because it was so good. There's nothing you can do about that. But other times, like you're not there to entertain me. You're there to give me quotes, and I'm there to ask you professional questions that aren't about your personal life. So I don't clap. I don't get pictures. I don't do any of that. If I'm like at DIFF or I'm at Dallas International Film Festival and the movie's over and the filmmaker is doing a Q&A afterwards, I'll clap for that. That's just me honoring his art. It's different than if I'm there.
So do people clap for Better Call Saul?
No. I mean, the only people that clap for anything are publicists that are working for the network.
Okay.
They sit and they stack them and put them all in the back. Like ABC brings out, it's always funny because it's like on ABC day, that's the day that you should go rob Disney Studios, because it feels like every person that works for ABC is hanging out at the Langham Hotel. And sweet. So, and there's like clapping and cheering because they want their art, they want their talent to feel good too.
Yeah.
And there's nothing worse than getting on it. You know, you're told your whole life as performers, you get on a stage, you perform and you get claps. But
yeah,
it's funny. For last WrestleMania, they did an actual first press conference for all the wrestlers. And all the wrestlers came out, and it was just journalists in the room.
Yeah.
Nobody clapped or cheered. Claps. And every wrestler was like, this is weird.
It's super weird. And it's like by the end of it, you hear almost, not by the end, but just like regularly, I hear, oh, what, you guys aren't going to clap for us? Oh, you guys paying attention with your laptops down there? Like, it's funny to them because it's like, it's a shocking experience for them. But when I've heard that 4 times in 1 day for 16 days straight, I just want to throw my laptop at people by the end. But it's one of those things, like the publicists aren't telling the actors or performers that that's what to expect and all these different things. And there's also a lot of training of the parties at TCA are very interesting. So we have these evening parties that are interview opportunities. So they're very different. Like, that was a big transition for me when I started going, because I was like, what, I interview people at this party? Like, that seems really rude and really hard to like, navigate, because it's hard to hear and everything. But you go to these parties, so, like, we'll use ABC again as an example, because they're great. They bring talent out, and they have, like, little spots, and you actually just go up to them, and you're like, hey, Andrew, can I talk to you are you busy? Can I talk to you for, like, 5 minutes about how to get away with murder? And then you shove a microphone in their face, and you talk to them over appetizers. And it's very bizarre. It's a very, that's very cool. Strange experience. But it is really cool. So, like, I never worry. So you kind of plan your days around, so, like, if you get questions that you got answered in the panel or you had something that popped up and you don't want to go scrum, because a lot of people scrum, which is like, it's like sports.
Scrum, yeah.
So scrumming is...
it's heavily in sports.
It's very popular in sports. It's when, if you think about... Whenever you would see a talking head on the news and you see like all the different mics in their face,
okay.
That's a scrum. Yeah. So it's just like a 7-on-1 or something, just like a mic shoved in their face.
That's scrum before that.
Formerly called gangbangs, but that's
yeah, I know. That's just the classier way.
So Better Call Saul.
Better Call Saul.
Did you get to watch any of the episodes?
I have not seen any of the episodes, which is unfortunate, but I've heard nothing but amazing things about it. I just didn't have time leading up to it. It just came a lot quicker.
Oh.
Oh, no, you're fine.
I was curious, how are the questions compared to... Because this does seem like such a different experience from, like, Comic-Con.
Yes, it's so different.
Are the questions much better then, because it's all a bunch of journalists?
I wouldn't say that. There are some times when the show is, like, really well done or the talent is really interesting. A lot of the times, I refuse to ask a first question because I get very... That first question always sets the tone. I'll give you a great example.
Smash.
And then, like, my friend Jolie, who works for Access Hollywood, Angelina. She always asks really good questions because she's coming from broadcast and TV work. And so her stuff's a little bit more fan-oriented. So, like, for... what is the name of that show? For Outlander. She would ask things like...
Quality show, by the way.
I love that show. She would ask things like, can you talk about an experience you had while... You know, like, by filming. Or what's your accent like? Or how was that process? Or now I ask a lot about costume, typically, just because I'm very curious about the look of how shows work. And I've asked... I usually ask about directing, too, if it's, like, a show that has really cool directors. Like, Better Call Saul, being a Vince Gilligan show, anybody that works for Vince Gilligan has to get the Vince Gilligan look. Like, has to get the mise-en-scene that he has worked so hard to create. So I had asked him when they did the Better Call Saul in July, when they did the panel then, I had asked him, like, what sort of directors are we expecting? And do you have to work with getting the right vibe and all that? So that's, like, a question that I would ask over the mic. There are a little bit more personal questions, like for the fall, for Jamie Dornan being Christian Grey for 50 Shades of Grey. I wasn't going to ask in a ballroom a question about 50 Shades of Grey, but I went up to him later and asked about it. But then he wouldn't respond. He wouldn't answer questions about anything but the fall.
Do the talent, do they show up like fully dressed up?
Yeah, they do. Because they're told, it just depends. Some of them like Justified and
they've probably been there a few times, kind of.
They have been, but they also have their image, you know. So like
Countrywide.
What was that? The motorcycle show that I love, Sons of Anarchy. Like they all come off looking like they just got off a motorcycle, and I'm like, you guys are actors. Like none of you live that outlaw life. I don't know what you're trying to do. And then other ones, like you can always tell the women who have done the junkets more than once. Because the more experienced you are, the longer their skirts are. Because they're up on a stage, and sometimes they're even propped up higher on the stage, and I'm just like, these poor girls. You're just showing all their bits out.
Speaking of beautiful
So, Gabby Hoffman this year?
No Gabby Hoffman this year, thank God.
She's on Girls this season.
She's on Girls. Well, she had a baby, apparently.
But she has what? She's
married. I can't even.
Poor Gabby Hoffman.
She doesn't want to hear that. She wants to only be known for what she's working on currently.
And how is the Mad
Men? Which is another thing that happens. Like, you get these, a lot of actors, especially if they're newer actors, they don't want to talk about the stuff they did in their past. They really want to only talk about the show that they're there for because that's the talking points they've practiced. And that gets really challenging because, you know, a lot of the time these are shows we've seen a pilot for. If we didn't get the move, if we didn't get the screener 2 weeks before TCA, the likelihood is we didn't see it. So we're asking questions based on a trailer that they've showed us. So you run into that a lot, and you're so like, I talked to Charlie Weber from, he's on How to Get Away with Murder Now, but he was on Buffy the Vampire Slayer in season 4 or 5. And so I was, his publicist was like, can you put, and you do a lot of pity interviews so that you can get Viola, you have to talk to Charlie Webber so you can talk to Viola Davis. And you're like, all right, that's fine. So I was like, let's talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And he was a good sport about it, but I've had ones that are like, nope. I'm not talking about that.
Why would they do that? Why?
I don't know, because they haven't had their second coming of, like, the fact that they're actually lucky to have a job. They haven't experienced that yet.
So how was the Mad Men final panel?
It was a good panel, actually. I mean, as much as a Mad Men panel can be good, because they're, again, very secretive, very closed off. But Matt Warner, Weiner, who the showrunner, he's been through this game a bunch, so he's able to kind of, like, drop little nuggets and know that he has to play with it. And then Jon Hamm was, like, he was giving some really good... Yeah, he did ham it up. He was giving some really good bites. And they take good pictures, too, so it's always funny.
I love Jon Hamm.
Have you put your covers on Fresh Fiction TV yet?
We're still rolling it out, because I like to kind of do it closer to the actual
show
coming out, because otherwise it's, like... Let me talk about Mad Men now when the show comes out in April, and it's like, it's then we don't have any Mad Men coverage then. So it's like right now I'm really working on premiere stuff and all the mid-season premieres, because that's all going on right now.
What are you excited about from the mid-season?
Have you seen
stuff?
The Fox comedies?
Besides Empire.
I love Empire so much. I saw the Last Man on Earth, which is very weird. I really like it. I think it's really funny. This is Will Forte's new show that he did with
Chris Lord
and
Phil.
Phil Miller.
And Chris Miller, sorry.
Yes, thank you. I was like, there's an Andrew Miller in there somewhere? No. About who did 21 Jump Street, 22 Jump Street, the Lego movie. They're like the hot commodity in comedy right now. Will Forte being known as MacGruber, but also from SNL. It is about a man who is the last. A virus has hit, killed everybody in the world, and he is the last person on Earth. And it's something that would make an amazing film, but it's very interesting that they're doing it as a TV show. It seems basically what it is the minutia of what do you do when you're the last person on Earth. So every episode is just basically him by himself. Trying to figure out
how to expand it, though. There's actually going to be some other people in the show.
Yeah, there's going to be more characters and stuff that show up. It's very, it's hard because I know, and I don't want to be like, and these people show up, and this person did it. But if you go to IMDb, you can see, like, January Jones is going to be doing an arc. Kristen Skull is doing an arc. But I think it's a really interesting concept. The only problem that the only issue I see with it is that it does feel like it would be a much better movie, but it's beautiful too. It's the best shot show I've seen since Breaking Bad. Like, it just looks so cinematic.
Cool. There's a graphic novel that's sort of like that too that's coming out, Why the Last Man, which is a little different, but that's also another that's going to be coming.
But it's definitely not a comedy, and they're premiering it in March when it comes out. They're premiering it as a double episode, which you need, because the first episode he doesn't speak until like halfway through. Half hour show, yeah.
Yeah.
What else came out? I really liked Wayward Pines. I liked Wayward Pines.
M.
Night Shyamalan's is not bad. It's pretty fun.
Weird Loners.
Weird Loners is the other one. I'm sorry.
Do you think that will go anywhere?
No, it's close ended, which is really nice. It's totally close ended. It's coming out this summer. 10 episodes and that's it. Okay. Also starring Terrence Howard, and it's very M. Night Shyamalan. So if you like Signs, or you like, I would really equate it more to The Village meets Twin Peaks.
Okay.
It's that same sort of vibe to it, where you have a detective who stumbles upon this town. He's looking for his former partner, and shit happens. And so
Did Showtime say anything about Twin Peaks?
Showtime did say something about Twin Peaks. That's when they announced that Kyle MacLachlan was going to be back in it. They actually brought him out, and I was like, it's not a show I watch.
Like, he's a main character?
Yeah,
or?
He's a star, yeah.
Okay.
What about Vince Gilligan's new show, Battle Creek?
So Battle Creek, I saw that back in July, and that's good. He's not working on that show as much as he's working on Better Call Saul.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's more like he's trying to diversify his portfolio. But
from House, the guy that did House is also doing that.
Yes, that's going to be mostly his show.
Okay.
But what were we talking about? I don't even remember. You guys are throwing
some questions
out. The other mid-season comedy from Fox is Weird Loners, which stars Zachary Knighton from Happy Endings. It's yeah. And it's got Becky Newton from Happy Endings. I really liked it. I do not think you should get attached to it.
Because it won't last long.
It will not last long. It's weird. The first, you don't really get why they're called weird loners because none of them are weird, nor are they alone. But they're loners together, I guess. I don't know.
Another Happy Endings alum, though, also has another show. Liza Cuthbert's coming out with this show, right?
Yes, she's over on the shitty lesbian show on NBC, One Big Happy. It's terrible. It's the worst.
So that's not going to last?
No, it will not last. It was awful.
NBC needs to find something.
NBC needs to quit what they're doing. They should have just renewed Parks and Rec and called it a day. Or just go back to doing dramas. Like, their dramas are pretty solid.
Did Netflix have a panel?
Netflix had a panel. Netflix presented The Fall, Kimmy Smits. No Daredevil. We didn't get Daredevil.
How's Kimmy Smits?
Kimmy Smits is funny. It's really clever. It's about Tina Fey's.
I can't believe NBC passed on it.
I can't.
It probably wouldn't have been able to survive on NBC.
Yeah, it wouldn't have. This was actually a really. After listening to Tina Fey talk about it, and this is Tina Fey's production that she was doing with NBC Universal, and NBC had wanted to buy it, and then they weren't. Then they decided to not do it because they were getting out of the Comedy Game.
Yeah.
It would have died on NBC. At least on Netflix, NBC can make some money off of it still.
Yeah.
And they have less of an audience to worry about buying it.
For a second season too, so
yeah. So it's very. I really liked it. It's about a woman, and it stars
Ellie Kemper.
I'm so sorry, guys. So many famous people. Yeah. And it is about a woman who has been in a cult and gets freed from it, and her picking up her life and starting over.
It's very funny. The trailer looks really
it's
good.
It's very, very funny.
She's hilarious.
It's very, very funny.
Did they discuss anything about season 3 of House of Cards or the second season or the fourth season? Or, well, I guess, never mind. Fifth season of Arrested Development?
Nothing about Arrested Development. They really are interested in doing more about it, but schedules.
They picked up another Will Arnett show, though, right?
They did pick up the new Will Arnett show. That was after they didn't present that to us because that was after there was like a week after they presented to us. But to go back to House of Cards, it's coming back in a
couple weeks.
February. So
27.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's fine. They're happy with that show.
So the first TCA of this 2015, was it good?
It was good. It was a lot better. We kind of always compare them from like tour to tour. Like July's tour last July's 2014 was terrible. It was just, the problem is it was super early, and when you go that early, you run into talent troubles because they can't pull the talent. They're not going to pull talent off of. Off of shooting or vacation, because that was so early. There weren't nobody was in production yet. Oh, wow. We would ask people like, "Oh, when are you going to production?" They're like, 2 weeks from now. So it was just really, really hard, and all they had was the pilot to go on. So they couldn't talk about story. They couldn't talk about anything. The winter is always really good because if they're smart, they bring old talent back. And so they're able to answer lots of questions and get some good stuff. And I really liked this one. I think HBO kind of had a week. They had a very weak lineup, but it's also because I just didn't like any of the shows because there was.
Did they bring out the True Detective cast?
They did not bring out True Detective, but they brought out the Jack Black show. That's like the interview, but it's not very good.
Okay.
Called The Brick or The Brink.
Okay.
And then they brought out Togetherness, which was a fine panel. It's not a show I really enjoy, but. But I'm very excited for one that surprised me. Adult Swim is doing it. Jack McBriar is doing a pairing. Up with Triumph the Comic Insult Dog.
Oh, I heard about
and
that.
And it is awesome.
Because his personality in Triumph.
Oh my god, it's so funny.
Perfect.
And it's old school 80s sitcom sort of style about a child actor. And his co-stars, played by Triumph the Comic Insult Dog, who have come upon hard times and have to become friends again as adults after being teen actors, child and actors together. It's funny. It's really, really, really funny. It's really, really vile. And there's going to be lots of celebrities on it, and there's some celebrities that are playing themselves, and then there's other celebrities that are playing different characters, like Chris Maloney from Law & Order SVU pops on as a security guard, so it's really funny.
Definitely.
That was a surprise for me.
Yeah, I heard about that, and I immediately was interested.
Any other TV shows you're excited about? About, like, iZombie, or...
So, iZombie was really funny. I did not read... So, iZombie CW, and it's a new Rob Thomas zombie show, and it's a lot if you think about, like, if Veronica Mars met Warm Bodies, it's so much like that, but it's based off of a graphic novel. Mm-hmm. But that's essentially what it is Warm Bodies meets Veronica Mars.
Isn't there zombie one, a bigger, Carlton Cuse? What's...
Oh, you're thinking... I think you're thinking of that. Oh, no, you're thinking of The Returned.
Yeah.
Which is based off the French show. But the Returned is on A&E.
Which is like
the American show. It's exactly like Resurrection.
So yeah. It's not zombie or...
No.
It's Come Back from the Dead.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So iZombie is actually... She is a 100% fully functioning zombie. Yeah. And she has to eat. And she solves crimes. She works in a morgue. But she helps solve crimes by eating the brains of... dead people and being able to solve how they died.
It's very similar to a comic book Chew. Where the police, he wasn't a zombie, but the police detective could eat people and find out their killers.
Yeah.
And it sounds like the zombie movie Life After Beth.
It is.
Which she came back, but she was fully functioning. Mm-hmm. And could talk. And
which I love. There's a mockumentary called American Zombie.
Yeah.
That came out many, many years ago. And it's all about full functioning zombies and like how they integrate into life, and it's a very funny movie if you ever have time to watch that. But iZombie was good. It was weird because I didn't realize it was Rob Thomas when I was watching it. I didn't realize it was Rob Thomas, so the whole time I was like, this is like Veronica Mars but with zombies, and this didn't work out for Veronica Mars, so I don't know if I want to get attached to this right now.
And
then
like, oh, it's Rob Thomas.
And then it was Rob Thomas, and I was like, oh.
It sort of worked out. All right. Three seasons, and then got a movie.
Yeah, it's David Anders is on it, who I love. You might remember him from Alias as well as Heroes. He's on it again, playing a British person, even though he is from like Ohio. It was I liked it. I wouldn't watch it every week. Like, it would definitely be a show that I'd watch like in the summertime as a marathon. It's not something that would be. It's not like Empire for me. Like, Empire is my new jam, and like I can't wait for Tuesdays because I love that show so much. Wow.
Well, cool. Well, thank you for talking about TCA.
Yeah, until I'm glad
next time on TCA. Before we move on to our What If segment, by the way, Gotti Elkon made it.
Hey, what's
up? In the middle of that. If you did not know, he just wasn't being silent. I want to bring up two bits of news that came out today. One, Emma Watson from Harry Potter will be has been cast as Belle as Beauty and the Beast.
Which is funny because she was going to be Guillermo del Toro's Belle first, but then canceled. So
and she's going to be that. And then one of our favorite doctors, David Tennant, has been cast in
as Kilgrave / Purple Man.
Yes,
in
Jessica Jones on Netflix.
Those are pretty cool. I think that's great casting.
He has the power of
suggestion. I'm happy for Emma Watson. I think she'll kill it.
He's a good villain. But I'm very interested we were talking about this in my office earlier today, but I'm very interested to see who they're going to cast as the Beast to go with Emma Watson. I really like her, but she's so young. Beastly redone.
I agree, Ron Perlman. He did it with Linda Hamilton back in the 80s. He could do it again.
Skip. Well, hard skip on that one.
Hard skip. That's what.
But it's also, we didn't talk about the fact
how attractive are they going to make the Beast? That's the more question.
Yeah, that is. I would much rather he be ugly and at the end we get flashbacks of how beautiful he was. I'm totally cool with that. But it's also written by, what's his face that wrote Perks of Being a Wallflower?
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Chabon or... Mm-hmm.
Steven. Yeah. Steven Chomsky.
It's directed
Chomsky?
By... Chomsky?
And it's not Chomsky.
Oh, it is Bill Condon. Yeah, it's Bill Condon who just did Into the Woods and did Chicago.
So it makes sense.
No, that's not Marshall.
He did
the Twilight, and then he also did Dreamgirls.
So it makes sense that he cast
Emma
because they just got... Well, that's awesome. All right. Sweet.
That's good. Is the funny guy, the
Lumiere?
Oh, the Gaston?
Gaston?
Is he Gaston? Yeah.
That's the bad guy?
Yeah, the bad guy.
It's not a bad guy.
Yeah, because remember, there's that story.
He saves people's lives. Let's not forget.
There's a story of him, of the guy playing him at the Disneyland that got in a fight with a little kid to do pizza strength. It was hilarious.
It was good. Actually, not a fight, but he did push-ups.
He's a handsome
one-handed. I do agree with Gotti. I do think Belle's a pain in the ass. And Gaston is right.
Belle just wants... You guys are just mad
she's
a woman.
Read. She just wants to read.
Yeah, she doesn't want to be somebody's
learn, but she's supposed to be in the kitchen.
She's
cleaning.
Is what he's saying.
A tiny brain, you know. It's
exactly.
It's only good for one thing at a time.
That tiny brain save you from the big beast?
No.
The tiny brain did save from the big beast.
Right. There's a study that came out that said girls that are readers
are smarter.
Like best lovers, actually, for
that's
some
true.
Reason.
They're reading.
I'll let Cliff help fill you in on that one.
We'll get Cliff on the phone.
Cliff on the phone right now.
Glenn, you have an office?
I do.
All right.
It's also my kitchen.
All right, moving on to one of our moving on to one of our newer segments called "What If," where we take a movie that came out a number of years ago.
Your phone is huge, man.
Thank you.
I know, it's ridiculous, isn't it?
My father, too, has a large phone.
What's the plus?
But we take a movie and we talk about, casting decisions that were made or what if this person was cast in this role. So, last week, Mark, was it the 15th anniversary of Boondock Saints 15th? Releasing?
Crazy.
15th. It came out in 2000.
Yeah, 15.
January of 2000, it was released in, two theaters for, a day.
It counted.
I thought it was way later, way earlier.
No, it was 2000, because I remember getting the DVD in my dorm room in 2000 at Kansas, and it was a bootleg from Canada.
Yeah, we had all of them for Boondock Saints 2 at the Angelica.
Oh, my God. And I remember because the space between when Boondocks came out and when Boondocks 2 came out.
Well, I want to tell you about, we all know that Troy Duffy, the director and writer, fucked himself over because this was the hottest script in Hollywood. The Weinsteins bought him a bar, a four-picture deal, and had a three-album deal with his band, which is featured in the movie, Boondock Saints. But Troy Duffy was so hard to work with that he lost everything, and they only released the movie in two theaters for a weekend.
Yeah.
And then finally came out later. But originally, Duffy wanted Stephen Dorff and Mark Wahlberg to play the brothers.
I'm out.
Wahlberg passed to do Boogie Nights. We can all agree that was a good decision. But let's talk about that first. Stephen Dorff and Mark Wahlberg. Could that have worked? I think that could have worked.
Oh, you could. Okay, sorry. I don't know what that sounds like.
I've got a scenario for this, by the way.
Huh?
I've got it.
Depends on how much muscle Mark Wahlberg has.
Before Wahlberg was decided, though, DiCaprio was supposed to get Boogie Nights.
That's true.
So let's say DiCaprio gets Boogie Nights.
Oh my God.
And Wahlberg has to take this. That's your scenario right
there. Yeah.
Hunger Games. Hunger Games style.
There'll be no entourage.
I actually would be. Because Mark Wahlberg in that time period, he wasn't super. I mean, he wasn't super jacked. He didn't. He was still a fresh actor where I think he could have.
Fear?
Yeah.
He really pale.
People like
Fear.
It's
really wonderful.
And so it would have been interesting. And Stephen Dorff, I really love Stephen Dorff, so I think that he could act with anybody.
Yeah,
be Norman Reedus or not
bigger.
Be.
Those Blue Easton commercials?
He was a hell of a lot bigger than all three of them. Stephen was the biggest name at that
time.
Because
he was the main villain in the Blade movie.
Yeah.
And he was wonderful in that.
So they also wanted... They were looking at Brendan Fraser and Nicky Catt to play the brothers as well.
Yeah.
Which,
Nicky Catt and Stephen Dorff, though, would have been... bananas.
Brendan Fraser was also in the running, too.
Well, I got to that, man. I'll get to
Who's Nicky Catt?
We're not at the FBI agent. You're talking about the brothers.
Oh,
Nicky Catt, he's you dominant male monkey motherfucker. He's the bad guy. He's on all the Tarantino movies.
Just look him up.
He's in Days of Confused.
I have a thing that...
Let me go look. But, and then also, let's talk about the FBI agent played by Willem Dafoe. They originally thought of Kenneth Branagh or Patrick Swayze to play that role. Both turned down the role.
Was it always
Kenneth Branagh would be
having
terrible
the gay?
I don't know, but I think that's awesome.
Well, also,
that made the character.
Miramax actually wanted a bigger star in there, and they weren't trying to get Sylvester Stallone or Bill Murray to be to be Snecker, which I couldn't see.
Well, they wanted Sylvester Stallone, Bill Murray, or Mike Myers for that agent role, but
maybe Myers.
Bill Murray would have not been terrible.
It would have been
awesome.
Say if Mike Myers could pull off kind of Robin Williams' performance in One Hour Photo, that kind of creepiness would have been really cool.
Yeah, that was right. Mike Myers. right before, like, when was the first Austin Powers? Wasn't that, like, right around this time?
1997?
Yeah.
98?
So, okay. So, like, yeah, he already had a little
bit. This is like,
but it makes you get why he wouldn't want to take that, because that would be such a big blast to his brand.
I can see him sort of being that eccentric, making Rulo eccentric character, but yeah.
Dwarf would have been fine, though.
Yeah.
I think Dork would have made it. Wahlberg would have been really
good. Ewan McGregor was also thought of for the role, too.
Oh, my God.
One of the roles.
He's pretty much Sean Patrick.
I mean,
it was like Life That's Ordinary.
It was probably 98, 99, so it was back then.
He would be
so
good.
Yeah. I guess he's really good. Sean Patrick Flannery could probably be the same.
Because think of how creepy he was in Shallow Grave, and that was like 92. So
and he was young.
And
like
I think Flannery.
He was really young, though.
I think Flannery and Reedus did a good job, but I think they're interchangeable. I don't see them as the ultimate ones. I think
like
these guys could have done a good job.
Sean Patrick and Patrick
I mean,
McGregor would have been a good job.
I just literally had a moment where I thought Stephen Dorff was in Boondock Saints, but no, it was Flannery.
Yeah.
But the only problem
now
is
I'm
he's
mad.
Kind of short. He's kind of short, though.
So
now,
the fact is, Flannery's career is the one that bottomed out of that group. And he looked like he could have been one of the better ones of that group.
Yeah.
I never thought Wahlberg was
I loved Powder.
Like, well, what did Norman Reedus do back then? Like, how? Why
that was like his first thing.
Yeah, this is Walking Dead. Only
that came out around what, 15 years.
Yeah, Reedus was an afterthought.
But Norman Reedus was also in Blade 2. I mean, I know it's in a career-making movie, but he was.
But yeah, so he, you know, he got lucky that all these other people.
Because that's how I knew him.
Because that put him on the map. Which eventually led to him being in Walking Dead, and now he's everyone's fan.
Well, if you're a fan of the movie Boondock Saints, and you haven't, there's a documentary of the making of Boondock Saints. It's called Overnight, and it's basically about the downfall of this director, Troy Duffy, who was a bouncer at a Boston bar. And then when his script got out, it was literally the number one script in Hollywood, and the Weinsteins did buy him the bar. They gave him a picture deal, and he burned so many bridges that Weinstein's taketh away everything, and that's why you never really saw Boondock Saints in the theater when it should have been.
I want that Weinstein power, man.
I know.
Well, you don't bite the hand that feeds you, especially where you... I mean, this deal was like, this never happens. It doesn't happen like that. So, Troy Duffy was an asshole to work with, and even to his own family during it.
But that just also goes to show you how... I mean, yes, you have like the troubled artist and all that, but at the same time, there's something to be said for people who are first time doing something. Like, they just can't handle the pressure that is like a Hollywood film. It's like taking a really good football. It's like taking that other Mark Wahlberg movie about being a bartender and then a trying out for the Philly Eagles. Like, you just sometimes it doesn't work out.
Invincible.
I mean, I think Troy. I mean, I know when writers, because I've written screenplays and they're close. The screenplays are close to me, but I'm always open to interpretation and to other, you know, other input. And I would,
right?
Yeah, he didn't want any of that. Cause I remember during the documentary, they said like, oh, we're going to get Jerry Bruckheimer to help you produce it. He did not want it at all.
He didn't realize, you know, how the system works.
He didn't.
But I feel like if you write a screenplay, you do that, you're in the movies, you probably know.
But you're rational.
He was put on the pedestal. He wasn't just, oh, welcome to the club. He was said, you have the coolest fucking script we've ever seen. This could be a blockbuster. We can do whatever the fuck you want, but we need you to meet up with Jerry. We also need you to meet up with this guy and that guy. It wasn't as cutthroat as I mean, Duffy was a total dick and ended up being that. And if you see the documentary, you see him escalate. But that must have been a whirlwind to think, what? Jerry Bruckheimer's going to come in and critique my script? What the fuck does Jerry Bruckheimer know about me and my weird-ass Boston...
He knows how to make movies, and they're not giving them...
He's a gangster Boston.
Yeah, but you're also... And you're also coming up from such a rational point of view. Like, you would be somebody that'd be very open to somebody coming in and touching your stuff. I think of a lot about... Like, there's very similar, very, very common in book world, too, where an author sells their book, and then they automatically think that they should get everything handed to them. Their book should be, their movie is going to be number one, best thing ever done. And they want to write the script and people are like, no, no, no. And then they are stuck. And it just makes, if you are a talented person or you're creative, sometimes you just don't take criticism very well.
But I feel like these like suggestions, and they're not giving them shitty actors. I mean, minus probably Brendan Fraser, but everybody else, like, man.
And Brendan Fraser was hot then.
He
was in The Mummy.
Yeah, but still, that's kind of like where we're giving you access.
The Mummy?
And you, I mean...
The Mummy too.
Encino Man.
Dudley Do Right.
Well, fuck yeah. He did School Ties. He was a
He was a great actor.
I agree.
He wasn't as shitty as he is
Monkey
now.
Bone?
No offense to
him. I love Monkey Bone.
I do think Miramax made a bad call on Sylvester Stallone because I can't see Sylvester Stallone, you know, as animated as Willem Dafoe was in that role. He's more kind of...
When
robotic.
Did that crazy movie Oscar whatever come out that he did?
Which one?
Oh, in the early 90s.
Oliver?
Oliver. It was Oscar. It was Oscar.
Oscar.
Yeah.
That was extremely theatrical. Like
it felt like a play. It felt like a movie play.
Where's the best
yeah,
one?
Yeah.
I do think Connelly was perfectly cast, and I do think Dafoe was perfectly cast.
The voice of
cast.
Connelly is just...
But I think Reedus and Flannery could be interchangeable, unfortunately. Yeah. Or David Della Rocco, who basically played...
Which
David
I think just says something about the script and how it was done. Not necessarily. It could, if maybe there had been a little bit more openness to assistance from the studio, maybe that script could have been punched up a little bit too.
Yeah. But I can't believe it's been 15 years since that was released and since I saw it in my dorm room.
What would Jerry Bruckheimer brought to it? More explosions?
No, I don't think he would have done it. I think he just...
thing to have Jerry... I mean, I love Bruckheimer.
But Jerry was big then too because we had
he was
Armageddon.
A different type of action.
CSI.
Like, it's so different than the darkness behind Boondock Saints. It's such a dark concept compared to Bruckheimer, which is like happy action.
But I feel like...
Fun, but...
Bruckheimer, you have that person in your corner helping you get what you want. And he's like...
He's just like, I could see how a director, a young first-time director, given all the stars...
All the power he wants.
And you got to listen to the guy who made, you know...
Con Air.
The Rock and Con Air.
What? Con Air is genius.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you have access to it.
I'm not hating on Bruckheimer.
Harvey likes money.
He's 100 times better than Michael Bay. Let's not kid ourselves. But when it comes to that type of action, that's predictability is so obvious with Bruckheimer, where no one saw Boondock Saints coming, just like no one saw Reservoir Dogs coming. Imagine if you teamed up Tarantino with
Troy Duffy.
Richard Donner.
Yeah.
That's a different fucking Reservoir Dogs if Superman director comes in and says, you know, you need to have a little bit more happy punch, buddy. I can see Bruckheimer.
Yeah.
I'm like,
well,
you need to amp this up.
I completely agree. I can see why Troy Duffy would fight on some of these things, but then it goes back to the complex that he had, that everybody was telling him he was the most amazing thing ever, and that's what he bought into, and he was already like a tortured artist, and then he just snaps.
In the end, he is an asshole, and he was a failure for his own fault. I'll say that. I'm not trying to hate on Bruckheimer.
And I want to say that it wasn't only two theaters. It was only five theaters when it came out for a weekend, and it made $30,000 in five theaters.
Wow.
But on home video, it made over $50 million. And then it looks like right now, back in 2013, Duffy said he's working on a script for a third film or possibly a TV series. And he's Reedus and Flannery are confirmed to come back, and they're attempting to get Dafoe back. But in September of 2014, the third film, subtitled Legion, was revealed to be in pre-production. So that might be.
Did he do the second one?
Yes,
too?
He did the second one. Boondock Saints 2, All Day Saints. That's his claim to fame, because I think after after that whole debacle of Boondock Saints, nobody wants to work with him. So he's kind of like stuck with his own thing. Unless he...
Maybe he's different now. You don't know.
I mean, it's been 15 years.
Maybe he had the humbling.
Maybe he did have the humbling.
But yeah.
That was an okay movie.
I like the humbling. That's our podcast. It's our 50-second podcast.
What?
Weird.
Nothing else.
Maybe because you did.
Weird.
Lazy.
Unless it's Monday, we'll post this. What comes out on Friday that we should all see?
Let's do that.
What comes out Friday?
You have Black Sea.
I thought it came out this past week. Oh, shit, I posted everything for it.
Black or White with Kevin Costner.
Not Black Hat.
Black Hat. He's leaving Peters because it's terrible.
And Selma.
Can we talk about Michael Mann? Can that be our final segment?
You talk about Mordecai, the worst movie in the face of the earth?
I didn't see Black Hat, so I can't 6% talk.
6% Rotten Tomatoes?
Michael Mann has not made a good movie in a long time. Think about it.
An amazing director.
Project Almanac's also coming out this week.
Which one?
Project Almanac.
Oh, that's a time travel one?
I'm seeing that.
Yeah,
it was a lot better than I thought it was. Right? I was just like,
I liked it.
Too many crap.
Yeah.
And then Loft. I don't know what the Loft is, but.
Okay. Time. So, Black Sea, which was
it's
fun.
It's good. I liked it.
It's not amazing, but it's
good.
It's fun.
Carl Urban.
Is it good?
Take it back. It's good.
It's a great director.
Seen it?
You'll like it. God, you'll like it.
I wasn't invited to that. I love that director.
You like it.
Great director.
Yeah, he was good. He did a documentary on...
September.
We know.
July, September.
Yeah.
That's
yes. Steven Spielberg.
Yes, that's true. And yeah, I don't know about much about Black or White, but it is Kevin Costner.
It's a Mike Bender movie.
Okay,
if you know who
so
that
the,
is.
And he
Mike Bender. The yeah.
It's about it's about bridging racial prejudice.
He's had a couple movies like
so
that.
So like the song by Michael Jackson, Black or White.
Yeah, he had a HBO show for a while. The something is something.
But Kevin Costner plays a grandfather who's it's basically the same plot as Belle.
Just a little bit more recent.
Just recent, less slavery in it. But he's a grandfather who's
too soon.
Who has inherited? I don't even know the right word. Is he?
We also have mommy coming in.
Oh, hold on.
Go ahead.
Go.
You know, Adam just interrupts me all the time.
I do have to
talk about the incest.
He can't. He can't.
Adam is
can't
like, I'm over Kevin Costner.
Tell us the story.
But he plays a he's a grandfather who is now adopted his granddaughter who's black, and then Octavia Spencer comes in to wreak havoc.
Is it like 3 Days to Kill? Oh, it sounds like
yes,
it.
It's for sure 3 Days to Kill. It's basically Belle. It's the exact same plot.
3 Days of Condor.
So that was that, and then
so
you
what said, is what is mommy?
What is mommy?
Xavier
so excited.
Dolan's the movie.
Incest.
No, it's actually not.
What?
I was not there today.
I'm not interested.
I thought it was like brother sister love.
There was a screen of it this morning.
It's shot on the iPhone this way, like long ways.
Lord, I'm out.
So the frame is that.
Oh, I'm glad I did not go
really?
To it.
Yep.
How does that translate on the big screen?
It's like
horrible.
A sliver of the screen.
Has anyone never? I mean, people. Have
so we're getting lots of complaints about. Hey, what is the aspect ratio with these guys?
Wasn't that and that was. Wasn't that one almost nominated for
it was almost
Oscar?
Nominated,
yeah.
Are they watching on, like, their phones? What the fuck?
It's because they filmed it in the wrong... They filmed
Forge.
It holding
what
it wrong.
What was that movie called? Forge? I can never say it.
Force Majeure?
How does that not get nominated? But
that's ridiculous.
They think Mommy's this
yeah.
good.
Force Majeure was awesome.
Awesome!
Mommy didn't get nominated.
Yeah,
I know.
Didn't make the cut either. Old people, old white people that, that work at the Oscars were upset as well.
They were.
They were
yeah.
right on...
We're getting ready to get out of the January into the February, so...
We've been on the air for a long time.
An hour and 2 minutes.
I've only been here for 45 minutes. Let's
all
go.
Right, but that's it. That's our
it.
Podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's our podcast.
Next week, we'll,
podcast.
Next week we'll wheel out Susan.
We can see pick up.
Yeah, Susan will be back,
yeah.
maybe, if she's not
she's
dead,
dead
from
yeah.
AIDS.
Wow,
it's
don't end it on that note.
No, we love you, Susan. We miss you. Go see Black Sea.
Go watch Black Sea if you're watching anything this week.
All right. When find us on Facebook and Twitter and subscribe to us and review us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio.
And Facebook friend Brian because he needs more friends.
If there's anything
yes.
we can do to improve, let us know.
Wow, you sound so open to feedback.
We're not.
Feedback, give us.
We need input.
We hate feedback.